You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
So it's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flack from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money go there.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Ulster.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 2, Episode 8 of Cawley's Call, and thank you for joining us as always. And wow, what a 24 hours, 48 hours, where do we even start in terms of football and what's been going on, not only domestically, but obviously you've all heard the news of the European Super League, and Stewie is ready to go bananas here. So he is, he's only itching to get going. But before we get to that, and Stewie, we're going to follow on from the loving that we had last week with a certain Mr. Chris Forrester, and we have him in the studio tonight, everybody. Chris, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very, very welcome. Before we actually start our chat with Chris, and before we get into the football and the nitty-gritty stuff, obviously, since we started this podcast, you'd be in contact with different guests and different people. And generally, I have to say about everybody in the league, since we were playing, Stu, and now the lads that are involved, the managers and all the people you speak to, everyone, 99.9% of the people are sound and you get on well with everyone and all that kind of stuff. But I have to say, I never met you before, Chris. And I started texting you there the other day about coming on, maybe. And we all know you're a very talented footballer. Everybody knows that. But you're probably the most mannerly guest I've ever had in the studio. Please, yeah, thank
probably
you.
Probably the first time I've ever heard that.
Well, there you go. So I wanted to point that out.
High praise.
Your mum and dad has done a really
you
good
well
job.
Well
reared.
Because I value manners and respect, I have to say, a lot. That's how I was reared and brought up. I'd like to think I'm the same with people, but I wanted to point that out, that anytime you text back, it was thank you, appreciate that, and all that. I love that kind of stuff, Stewie. Isn't that nice?
It is nice, yeah. You'll go far, Chris. You keep doing that.
Thank you very much.
But I wanted to point that out, but you're very welcome, yeah.
Appreciate it.
You're happy and smiley. Things are going well at St. Pat's for you.
Yeah, things are going well. We started really well, but, you know, it's before I get carried away, you know, it's only a start. We're all reassured of that at the club. You know, we're not getting too far ahead of ourselves. We know what's required of us every week, and, you know, it's only going to get harder throughout the season. Mm. But we're ready for it.
Brilliant. And before, we're going to get into all that stuff with St. Pat's. We look back at the game on Saturday night, the 1-1 draw with Dundalk. Keeps you up at the top of the table. But, Stewie, the European Soccer League, talk to me.
Do you know what? I'm not surprised. You can't be surprised this has happened, because it's been touted for a long period of time. And you also have to look at the way the game has been going, especially in the Premier League and all the other clubs. You know, it's been driven by agents and people who don't really give a flying shite about the history of the game here.
And the owners, or the fans.
Mm-hmm. It's primarily American driven, right? I'm not going to say I told you so, but it's been coming for a while now. It's not good at all. No. I mean, it's not good because, for a number of reasons. But I mean, without getting into too much detail, we don't know too much, and I imagine an awful lot of work has been done on this, because there seems to be a TV broadcaster on board, a bank, JP Morgan, is on
with
board,
obscene money,
which, you know, create further difficulty as well, because people in this country should realize, you know, what happens when banks go bust, or, you know, how, you know, connected people are with banks. You know, we are predominantly, you know, completely connected with banks, you know, and when banks go bad, you know, people end up paying the price for it all. And so in terms of this, you can see there's a kind of a, it's almost like a double whammy going on here. And people may not realize this, we are intrinsically tied to this, because ultimately people pay for all of this. Mm. So you're going to have a scenario where, people are going to be earning, if they aren't already, you know, extortionate amounts of money. We're talking cartoon level.
But I think that's what's going to break the camel's back on this, Stewie. It's got to the stage where people already, I feel, and it's a good thing for us in the League of Ireland, that people are already kind of completely disillusioned with the game because of the money that's been involved in the game over the last number of years. If this happens, I think it's going to get to the point where they've alienated the fans and pissed them off so much with this and the way they've gone about it and the reaction and the widespread condemnation of it that we've seen over the last 24 hours. I think people need to boycott this 100%.
So, okay, that may well happen, all right. But whether or not they get anywhere with it, I don't know.
It's well down the tracks.
I don't know whether supporters can stop this.
It's going to come down to the governing bodies then with UEFA and FIFA, agree. And they're obviously talking about threatening the players not being allowed to play international games and all sorts of stuff. This is going to run and run, but it seems to be well down the tracks in terms of how much they're pressing forward.
Completely. And it's you're talking about people with huge power here, huge amounts of money. I mean, you only have to look at Real Madrid. I mean, Real Madrid have been bailed out twice by the city of Madrid in the last 15-20 years because they're broke.
And the 12 that are involved, this is a reason why, if there is a reason why they want to get on board now with it. They've accumulated 5.6 billion worth of debt, those 12 clubs, and largely 3.3 billion, I was reading of it, is down to bank loans.
Exactly, that's all this is for, Alan.
That's why they're doing it.
All they're doing is protecting, they're ring fencing their future, and they're tying themselves into a system that can't be brought down.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'll go back to what happened to us here. We all know what happens when banks go bust. They get bailed out, and we ultimately bail them out. Now, I'll offer a kind of an alternative here, maybe devil's advocate. And we've spoken on the show here about how we need the game here to thrive, or we need to support the game here and try and maybe pull some of those football loving supporters who are a little bit on the fence when it comes to the Premier League or English clubs. Can we get them to maybe look closer to home and get involved here? It could possibly be a positive for that. Because
you can sense that even on social media.
Completely. One of the few messages I would have gotten a couple of weeks ago off the back of maybe suggesting, look, we're a little bit infatuated with England. Can we not, like, you know, look closer to home? One of the messages I would have got from one person member sent to tell me that they were a Liverpool supporter all their life. They would be, you know, constantly spend money on Liverpool and whatever the case may be, and they realise now, do you know what, Liverpool don't give a flying shit about me. They really don't, like, you know. So he's focusing on, I think he might be a Pat supporter, like, you know.
If the fans can't see that now, they'll never see it. That's
no, hopefully they do, like, yeah. You know, hopefully they do. It's important, you know. The last thing we need is for the game to become, I don't know, Americanized, because it's the game here has a history. I mean, American football, baseball, it's the system they have there was the system they had from the outset. Mm. You know, there was always the system. There was no relegation. It was always just the big teams play. We have a different history here, you know, and you know, it's you know, there's all sorts of competition rights and fair play that play into it. But I'm delighted to see that the supporters are up and roar about it, but whether they can make a difference, I'm not so sure. This is like, you're looking at, I mean, you only need to look at in England and look at the big clubs, you know, Roman Abramovich at Chelsea. Do you think he gives a flying shit about
supporters? That's the point. That's why they're doing it. Then they've no affiliation towards it or allegiance. Chris, as a footballer, the European Super League, are you bothered with this stuff, or would you tune in now to what's going on?
Nah, not really. Like speaking to you before, I didn't really know what's going on. Don't really know. You just know it's money based, isn't it? They, like Stewie says, they don't care about fans. I think that's what you get with League World, and you know that, you know, every fan counts. That comes in the door, you know, their money coming in the door makes a big difference to the club. So,
and would you sense, like, as Stewie's touching on it there, and before we get into your career and I suppose where it started and how far you've come, but just what Stewie touched on in the sense of it could be an opportunity for us, that you might think the lads now who be shouting about Liverpool and Man United might think, oh, well, I'll go down to Pat's Friday night, or I'll go down to Daily Mount Friday night, or whatever the case may be, and you might be able to bring in an extra 150, 200 or whatever who have become disillusioned. Have you sensed, since you've been back prior to before you went away, that there's a bit more, or there's more interest in the league now, and there's more hype or optimism around it?
Yeah, I find there's a lot more stuff on, like, Twitter and that, because before, I think when I first came to Pat's and playing the league, there wasn't much really talk about the Ireland, you know, and they always have the hashtag greatest league in the world. That's, there's a lot of that stuff kind of going on, but in terms of, like, there's a great opportunity for fans now. You know, you might just pop down to Richmond to get some real football, you know, some real raw football, and make a difference in the League of Ireland for us and for everybody, I suppose. But no, it's like, there's a lot more exposure now, I think, for the league, and there's a lot more quality in the league. But it's definitely improved over the last few years, yeah.
Okay, well, take us back. You were, we had a chat here last, 2 weeks ago, was it, about the structures in schoolboy football and basically all the discontent amongst the people that are involved. But you would have played your schoolboy football at Bohemians first, then Belvedere, was it?
Yeah, so I played at Bowers when I was really young with my neighbour, my best friend's dad. He ran the team, it was like under 9s to kind of under 12s. And then kind of floated about just all over the place until I went 17s at Belvedere. And that's like I first got real structured football, and, you know, there was an emphasis on winning and, you know, progressing to the next level, whichever level that was. But in between then, I was kind of just in limbo, just playing. I played as a banger. Do you know what a banger is?
Of course I know what a banger is.
Yeah, I played
not
as a,
I played as a banger.
I played as a banger for Smithfield. I was a year too old, and I was a bit taller than all the kids. So I was coming up against, I think it was under 16s. They would have been all under 15s or whatever. And it was just gas. Like, I was just playing just to play football with my mates. And there was about 8 of us that were all too old. So we had 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds on the team that were playing. And then eventually I went to Belvo, and then kind of my career kind of kick-started from there.
Because one of the things we talk about now, and a lot of the debate goes around the fact that football is so structured now at academy levels or with young fellas training. But you, to me, when I watch you on a Friday night, and since you played, are the epitome of like just a street footballer, just goes out, does things off the cuff, naturally talented, gifted young fella or whatever. And you would have honed a lot of your skills on the street, the likes of that, in Smithfield as a banger.
Yeah, yeah, true. It's like you said, it is very structured. I think there's a lot of pressure on kids now. You know, you see what even the young lads on our team, you know, like, who did you play with? Oh, Kevin's, Belvo, Joey's, whoever. You know, I feel like they're just geared towards progression throughout. And it can be a good setup for them, I suppose. But
takes the enjoyment out of
it. It kind of takes the enjoyment out of it, which I love football. I just love playing. I didn't want the manager shouting at me at 15 years of age, telling me that blah, 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 whatever, you need to do this. So I kind of found that was my way of just becoming the player that I am. Like you said, just playing on the streets or playing with my mates.
And just being allowed to be like a free
just
spirit
being free,
type thing.
Yeah, and it kind of held me back, I think, when I got a bit older, because I always tried to just play that way, you know.
Right, are you relaxed as a character? Would you be fairly laid back? And
I was when I was younger, like when I first came to Pats, you know, it was almost horizontal.
Right.
But, the old boys used to always say that, like, you're so relaxed and chilled. But then as I got a bit older, pressure start building, and, you know, there's more expectations on you, which...
But before
you kind of get a bit more on edge with everything, and you know, I probably struggled with that,
right?
Because I didn't have that structure throughout the years.
Would you have sensed the reason I asked this about the young lads and all, because the debate around that in terms of what's the right way, and I don't think there's any right way. I went to England as a young fella, Stewie didn't, but we came through different paths as you did or whatever. But did you never feel at that age, I suppose 15, 16, did you see some of your mates going to England thinking, how come I'm not going? Or was there ever that pressure on you? Or were you bothered about that? Like,
there was a couple that played for Belvo that were going on trials to Chelsea and, you know, all these sorts of teams. And I was like, I never believed there was ever any good enough, never near good enough to play at any sort of level like that. So it was probably a lack of belief in myself that kind of held me back.
Looking back now, and you know, obviously you're very good now, but looking back, do you think I was good enough, but you just didn't believe it at the time?
Yeah, I went to a trial at Belvo under 13s because I had a friend that played there, and I remember then I couldn't play because I wasn't signed, and, you know, I just sacked off. I was like, I'm not good enough to play for these, or, you know, this is way above me. So I just went back and then played with my mates. So it was probably one of the regrets I had, because that Belvo team went on to do a lot of good things. I eventually ended up there under 17s. So yeah, it's probably
the mates you played, they wouldn't have been associated with schoolboy clubs. They were just lads, maybe just knocking the ball about. They might play for some of the lower league clubs.
It's so interesting though, Stuart, because the stuff you often touch on this about, it's nearly a psyche thing.
The psychology
that we don't think we're like. I remember going to England first, and the day my dad told me I was going on trial, I was like, "What am I going over there for?" Like,
you know
that kind of attitude. You don't really believe. And 2 days into training with them, I'm like, what was I even thinking? Like, I'm every bit as good as these fellas.
Yeah, I found that when I went to England as well. I was terrified going there. I was like, I'm going to be all over the place here. And the first few weeks I was in there, I was like, geez, I'm well capable of playing here, probably even better.
So before we get to the England stuff, because it's interesting that, I suppose, how you came through and the Bohemians thing. And I think, were you on the FOS course as well?
Yeah, I done the FA League FOS course. I'm not sure what year that was now. I think it was my first year at Pats. Mm. So that worked out well where we trained in the evenings at Pats and I done the stuff at the FOS course in the daytime. They worked around the training and the courses and that. So that was brilliant. That was probably first bit of exposure to, like, you know, what kids would be going through at academy levels in England. And, you know, they do their classes in the morning, go and train in the evenings. But that was unbelievable. Like, I was getting paid then to play matches in the first course, like, for doing the courses and wherever. So that was excellent. I loved it.
Free money, almost.
Yeah, it was free money. I wasn't doing anything. We were training in the mornings. We're getting paid to train. That was my first kind of exposure to getting paid in football.
And did you sense then, after going from the FOS stuff and the training, and then you obviously have more belief about you in terms of you've just signed for Pats, did you feel then, I can make a career in this?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, it was always a dream for me to play in the League of Ireland.
Was it, yeah?
Yeah, massively. I always loved the League of Ireland.
Did you support the team as a kid?
Yeah, I was a massive FOS fan growing up. Like, loved them. Like,
who was your favourite player at FOS? Who would your eye have been drawn to?
I had a few, like, throughout the years, because I was there for a long time, like, looking from the fan side of it. I liked Derek Swan at one stage. Right, yeah. I was really young then.
Right.
And then Kevin Hunt, Jocks O'Kelly is probably me. Killian Brennan as well.
Yeah, right. Killian, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to tell him that, though. He's too big-headed.
But
I loved him. I loved balls growing up. I remember we used to always go to games, and then we'd run home, me and my best mate. We'd run home onto the pitch in Queen Street, and we'd be shouting, like, passing. Kevin Hunt, John Paul Kelly on the wing. It was mad. Like,
okay.
It's so awesome.
You're our dream guest, Chris. Finally, you've arrived. You know, because
I told you he was a good one.
But you epitomise what we would love. I know this can happen. I feel so many young kids can be exactly like you and aspire to come up the same way. You know, like,
what the dream should be.
Yeah, like I mean, you know. You're a perfect example, right? You're easily good enough to play at a level in England, and you proved that, okay? Mm-hmm. But, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't work. Maybe it wasn't for you. Maybe you didn't like it over there. Like, maybe you were more relaxed coming home, or you wanted to maybe kind of achieve something coming home. But, I just feel there's so many kids out there that can come up the way you did, looking at Bows or Shells or a particular player, you know, and wanting to be like that. But unfortunately, we don't sell
the dream to them enough.
We don't highlight these players as being fantastic athletes and super footballers. You know, there's almost like we're ashamed to do it. Mm. You know, we're under the shadow of England. I suppose.
Yeah, because anytime you talk to someone that's a young age now, what do you want to do? Like, you know, I want to play in England. Yeah. I want to play in England.
Seems to be the be all and end.
Everything's England. I got that kind of. I was like that a bit. Later on never as a kid. I always wanted to play football when I was younger.
I was the same, because I was just in the showgrounds since I was that size growing up. I never got to play for Sligo Rovers, funny enough, but a huge fan. But so when you signed for Bows, like, how big of a deal was it for you then?
Dream come true,
honestly.
Like, I'm not messing, it was proper dream come true, as I spent so many years there. But it's one of them, like, me and my best friend, we used to always go, and he then passed away, so I always associated Bows with some of the happiest times of my life with him.
Okay.
So it was kind of me doing it for him as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right, I'm not talking about that. Wow. Yeah, emotional talk.
Yeah, that's really good. Like, I mean,
so not only does it bring back the memories of the fact of a kid growing up, but your best memories with your best mate.
Yeah, it's like something. It's. I'd be almost looking at it saying, like, he'd be looking at me saying, "Come on, you're doing me proud," or whatever. I know that's deep, but
it's amazing. And would you have sensed that when you were playing, you were almost, not only were you doing it for yourself, doing it to make your mate proud? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Because there used to be loads of us there. Like, there'd be everyone from my school at the Bows matches. All little mad things running around.
Might be asking for your mate's name.
Yeah, it's Adam Warren.
Adam Warren. And, like, do you feel like, would you ever put yourself under pressure that Adam, you know, to do it for Adam? Is it a different dynamic?
It's a different dynamic. It's not pressure. It's like it's a proudness. It's brilliant. You know, something that fills me up with joy that I lived that for us, if you get me.
So what would Adam made of you leaving Bowes and going to Simon Pats then?
I think I don't know. I think he would have been all right.
He would have understood.
Yeah, because it turned out well at Pats.
I know, I'm joking. Because obviously you won the Young Player of the Year that first year. You had a great season. But then the Pats thing came, full-time football. And that's really where the career kicked off, I suppose. And that goal that everybody remembers.
Jesus, yeah. Yeah, that's a long time ago, that.
I was only reading about it today, actually, because... Everybody remember it was amazing, the goal, the chip against Shamrock Rovers, but that was back in 2012, I think, was it, or 13?
Sometime like that. It's very long ago. I'd often sit there and just think to myself, Jesus Christ, I'm old.
I never realised. I don't mean this disrespectfully. I thought you were a bit older, but you're only 28.
What I should think it was.
I thought you were about 32.
Did you?
Because you've been around so long.
I thought you were younger. I would have said 26.
I looked at your age today and I thought to myself,
26, wow, I'll take that.
He's in the prime of his career here now. And Pat's, obviously there's a lot of talk about you at the moment because how well you started the season.
Yeah.
We all know the talent that you have. Last year maybe didn't go as well for you since you've come back from Pat's, and we'll get to that. But this year you've hit the ground running. You're absolutely flying. The team are flying. So I looked at it today. Now, I thought you might have been 30 maybe.
30?
But when I saw 28, I thought, he's in the prime of his career. Pats are getting him like literally at the best days of his... not only will he be good this season, he'll go on and he'll be unreal for the next 2 or 3 years.
No pressure, Chris.
Even though you're so boyish looking, but you've been around for so long, I find.
Yeah.
So that goal, go back to that goal. Was that just, again, we go back to the stuff on the street, off the cuff.
Yeah, I was in Queen Street Flats playing football. I was on Richmond, but I was in Queen Street Flats, chipping me mate.
I bet you you've done that repetitively
we used to play this game called long shots, and you weren't allowed in your goal, so you'd be like chipping the keeper like every day. We play, you have to chip the keeper starts on the edge of the box and you have to go back as the ball's kicked and that, so it's similar to kind of like that. And that's kind of, you know, I wasn't really thinking that at the time. It was just probably just natural, just came out of me from doing that all the time in the flats or wherever.
I think that's amazing because you hear the amount of debates and discussions around street footballers and all, but people don't really get the sense of what it means. Like, he's doing that every day in the street. See? And then it happens in a match and it just bangs.
So that's what happens. So I think people, you know, there's a difference when you play the game, and you know, there's a difference between how people understand from looking, you know, like, let's say a spectator looking on and going, oh, he was born with that. That was something he was born with, like, came out of the womb. Like, you know, they don't realise. You've probably tried that about 1,000 times.
Yeah, with busted footballs.
Yeah, and busted footballs.
Ripped footballs, everything.
Ripped shoes.
You know, there's a famous book, isn't it? It was the 10,000 hours or something. You know, it's a thing about, you know, becoming a top sports athlete, that you have to be able to kind of get to a set, you know, you have to practice something so much to be able to kind of perfect it, like, you know. But people don't get that. But I suppose, you know, playing, it's probably suited you playing on the street and just being in a natural environment, doing those things, you know, not having to think about it too much. That's why it looks so natural. You know, I think that maybe that's where people get this. You know, he was born with
class.
That.
Could you get over the reaction that time?
I know, I was mad because I went home and obviously I was pretty new to Twitter and stuff, and my notifications were
come bananas.
Boom, they were mad. So that was first kind of exposure to kind of something like that.
And were you going home thinking, Chris, because it became so, you seem like a very laid back boy, because it came so easy to you, it's just another goal, you're going home quite relaxed, oh, we won the match, but then all this kind of blows up.
It blew up more because I think it was on RTE as well, so I think I had a bit more exposure, and I knew it was a bit of a special goal, but no, I was buzzing off the reaction to it, because it was first kind of exposure to that kind of reaction, and you know, the love that you're getting from it. But no, I just remember going home and I think I had a chipper that night. just was normal night, like.
And I suppose the whole Pats thing, you were very successful that time and won the league. How important was it for you in your development that you had a manager who would allow you play? Because that was the one thing with Liam, that you were very kind of, the football that he encouraged, it was in a very attractive brand of football. He had a lot of technically gifted players, which allowed you flourish amongst that group as well.
Yeah, we had an amazing team. For the 4 years, I think we always had really good quality players. You know, that was another thing. I was going into that dressing room and, like, I was looking at playing alongside Killian Brennan and, you know, people that I grew up watching. And then they were just quality players. So they brought me on massively. In terms of what Liam brought to it, he just gave us this license. You know, we had a great understanding with Liam, and you know the way he wanted us to play, and I think we executed it pretty well. So it went fairly well, yeah.
And the position you predominantly used to play as a kind of left sided, as of a three up front.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a free roll type thing. As you start to develop, and you mentioned there that you're playing in a dressing room where you might be looking up to the likes of Killian, but then if all of a sudden you're thinking, I'm every bit as good as these lads, and you're growing into the role. Was there ever a point then you wanted to maybe go into as a number 10, or did you drop back in midfield? Because I know that the change of position happened when you went to England, but was that ever on the cards to happen here?
Not in the six role anyway, more of an advanced midfielder. I always see myself as a midfielder. But surprisingly, I've done very well on the wing. I got a good goal return from the wing.
Well, with Pats, I think it's 38 goals you got in 112 games. See, research.
Yeah. At least you researched something without my age.
Jesus.
No, I researched. I was just surprised that you're in.
but it worked well. I had a good understanding with Burma. Burma was great help for me through my learning process and coming into the league. And he was great. He done a lot of work for me.
He had to do a lot of work.
Yeah. But no, we had a great understanding. I think if you look back at most of our clips or my clips, it's a great link up between me and Burma. It really worked well, and I think we still have that kind of understanding now.
So the thing with the whole Peterborough thing then, did you sense there's interest coming from across the water because things had obviously been going so well for you?
Yeah, I was scoring. I think I don't know what my stats were, but I was scoring a lot of goals the year that I went. So I think I was thinking I'm ready to have a chance and go get him off. So I knew if I kept up the performances, and you know I always had this thing where people said, "Oh, you'll never go to England. He's too light and he's too skinny or whatever." So I kind of doubted myself.
Would you have listened to that?
Yeah, a lot. I didn't really go to the gym to change it either, though. So right. I listened
to
it.
Did that spur you on, or was
you
it
went
more
to the shipper?
Yeah, curry shops and all.
Would that have spurred you on, or would it have bothered you?
No, it didn't really bother me. I was fairly tuned into what I was, and no one was going to change my opinion on myself. So I didn't really. I knew there was a chance. I didn't really fully believe that I would. But then Peterborough came in, and yeah, a week later I was kind of gone. Straight over to there, yeah.
So in terms of, I suppose, a club coming in from England, a lot of the lads we see go away now, I feel it's so important for, as Stewie said, the lads that maybe come through the route like you did and eventually might play 50 games here, 100 games, club comes in from England and you're going straight into their first team. I think that's a better route now than lads going away at 15, 16 and getting caught up in the whole net of worldwide kind of talent coming in from everywhere and you become a number.
Yeah, you see a lot of kids coming back and they come back feeling like they're a failure. You know, I know a few people that would have been on trails the whole grade, and you see them doing nothing now because they couldn't get over the fact that they probably couldn't make it, or they got told, "Oh, you're not good enough for this team." So I think you are right in terms of get experience in the league and use it as a stepping stone, you know, you get.
And that's what this league
experience
offers for so many, like, you know.
Yeah. You see it with Alfie Lewis coming here now. He's a great player. I think he'll have a good career. He get great experience here, and then he'll bring it back to West Ham and he'll be the better for it. So I think it's definitely a way that you could go a bit later in your career, with the experience of playing the league.
Feel then at that stage, Chris, when the move came about, you were ready to go to England, you were ready for the challenge that it was going to bring to you?
I thought I was ready. You know, when I went there, it took me a while. I know it probably seems like I hit the ground running, but I was still not fully ready in my own head.
Mentally or physically?
Mentally and physically. But, you know, I was showing signs that I was capable of playing at a higher level. So I did kind of believe in myself to a certain extent that I deserved to get a chance away. So
when when you went to England then and there was the change of position, was there more of an emphasis on, I suppose, the manager? Did they spot that? Was that something they spotted straight away in your game that maybe what you were saying there to Stewie about being too light or not strong enough? And were they focusing on that and trying to get you to work on that side of things, or how did the change of position come out to move you back to number six?
So when I first went, Dave Robertson was the manager. He ended up getting sacked then a week later, so I was sitting there thinking, oh Jesus, what's going to happen to me here? But then Grant McCann was the assistant at the time, and you know, Grant McCann played as a number six, I think, throughout his career. So we've seen I was pretty capable on the ball, and you know, I had a nice crisp passing range in that. So he put me in the six, and I was thinking, oh, the six, I can't tackle, I can't do any of that. But he put me in there, and I really enjoyed it, just collecting the ball off the back four, and you know, being the
start
kind of assist before the assist,
yeah,
if that makes sense. And yeah, it worked out really well because I found myself on the ball a lot. You know, I was looking at my stats kind of every game to game, and you know, it's highest touches of the ball in the game, and you know, most passes, accurate passes, and I really enjoyed that aspect of it. You know, I wanted to go there and be more of a goal scorer and a creator of chances, but I found great peace in the number six role. I fitted into it well.
Yeah, it's amazing because there was a lot of foresight maybe from Grant McCann in seeing that. Now obviously he was a technical midfield player himself. Yeah. I know Grant McCann, but there was foresight in the fact that he could see that, because everybody could see the talent in terms of technically how good you were. But for him to put you in that sixth position, that's where I played myself, so I know the role really well, and it would suit you down to the ground.
Yeah, it does. I really enjoy it. You know, we play there now, I play alongside kind of Lenny in there, so it's a bit different playing as a two and that, but it's good going in, getting the game going from your back four, you know, always being receiving the ball, and you know, I really enjoy being on the ball, and I think it's one of my main attributes is my passing. So you know, why not just exploit it to the fullest? And you know, that's what I kind of
absolutely, yeah, because there was that game, the cup game on BBC, and people seen you playing in that position, and they were raving about you on the BBC studio and the panel. But I think it actually came as a bit of a surprise, not to us that would have known you, but to fans that would have seen you playing in that position, because they would have been so used to seeing you out in that wide left kind of role.
Yeah,
and as you says, there might have been that kind of narrative around you, well, he's lazy, or he's what is he doing playing in the number six position? But that night, it almost brought you, made you, like, everybody knew in the League of Ireland circles, but everybody in Irish football knew you after that night.
Yeah, there was a lot of hype around me after them games. I think, was that probably a West Brom game, was it? I think
the cup game live on the BBC.
I remember having
you ran the game.
That. Yeah,
Martin Cowan was raving about you.
Yeah, probably. I remember seeing all on Twitter then. But no, I enjoyed that, playing that role, and like you said, then it kind of exposed me to another level of people seeing who I was and what I was about. So it was good in terms of that.
And the whole Peterborough thing there, you were 3 years there, I think it was, Chris, in total?
Just 3 years, yeah, probably just a bit over 3 years.
Yeah,
I love Peterborough. It was a great time.
Would you look back on it as, like you said there, initially when you started, you didn't feel ready. As things progressed, You did very well, but looking back on it now, would you see it as a successful period in your career, or could you have done more? Could you have done better?
I achieved a good bit over there, like in terms of my own personal like performances and stuff. But no, it's definitely a letdown in the overall sense. You know, because I was definitely good enough to play there at a high level. I just lost total belief in myself.
Really?
Yeah, and kind of look back at it now, and you know, when you're in a different mindset and you're in a good mindset, you say, jeez, how did I let myself get into that state?
And what was it that got you into that state?
I was just homesick.
Okay.
I was just going to say, what was your life like outside of the football club? Like,
early in Peterborough, it was a bit mad. See, I'm the kind of person, I wouldn't ring up a company and get a phone bill or get internet into the house. So I was really shy like that. I wouldn't even be able to talk on the phone to them.
So you just did nothing?
I done nothing. So I used to have my PlayStation, and I'd go off the Golden Disc every day, buy a new DVD every day and watch it at night. I'd just go to Starbucks, and I didn't have any internet in the house, so I used to just go to Starbucks and bum the Wi-Fi for an hour and text people on that, and then go home and not talk to people. It was weird.
Where does that come from?
I don't know. I don't know. I was probably struggling a bit, like, cause
is it embarrassed to ask, or is it
just
a bit of
shy? I kind of had a bit of anxiety towards like talking on the phone or someone coming out of the house and.
Did you ever speak
on the internet? Like,
did you ever
weird.
Speak to anyone in the club about that, or did the club try and help you out in terms of if you said there that you needed to get something fixed in the house? Or
yeah, to be fair, there was a girl, Liz. She saw at the apartment though, and all you needed to do was really ask. If you needed the internet, you just say, Liz, could you get that? But It's like, I don't know, I felt like I was embarrassed or something to do it. It was a weirdo, I don't know. It's probably because...
No, I wouldn't say that. That's quite normal. Like, you come across a lot of kids like that.
Especially being away from home and your own.
Yeah, because I still used to be mad on everything. Yeah. I couldn't even make me bed when I went away. Oh, I don't know what age I was. Probably 21, I still couldn't make me bed.
Would you cook? Or would you just get
takeout? No, I nearly burned the house down all on stage. I swear to God, I'm not messing. I put a picture on me Twitter of the frying pan. So I lived in this, like, apartment block. But there was, like, three... It was like a... I don't know how to explain. It's like a flat, but in a bigger house, if you get me. I tried to make a stir fry one night. Yeah. I hadn't a clue what I was doing. And staff went on the oil and all. I was slapping oil on. Didn't know how much oil. A thing went up in a blazer. I was going to run in the shower, throw it in the shower.
Oh, Jesus.
But that would have been worse. So I thought in my head I'd run to the window, throw it out the window. But the woman underneath me was out having a smoke.
Wow.
And the thing fireball just came over her head, landed in the grass on the like the outside. And she's like, what the hell? And I put a picture on me, put a picture on my Twitter saying nearly burnt the house. Christy O'Neill always gives me a bit of stick about it.
Christy's a great fella.
But no, definitely can make a good stuff right now. I've found cooking over this this lockdown, so I'm a good chef now.
It's interesting though, Chris, that you say that period you went through there where you were feeling like that, but it affected your football?
Mm-mm.
No.
No, because I was probably playing the best football I've ever played.
Okay.
Which is weird.
In terms of the fact that you were so homesick, that began to affect your football.
Eventually it did, yeah. But if I kind of found on a Saturday that was my release of all, like, whatever I was feeling throughout the week, like anxiety, like sadness or whatever. I got onto the pitch and I was just free again.
Mm. So what were you missing most of at home? Just your family and people? And
yeah, see, I had a little girl. She was only one at the time. She didn't move with me because me and my partner broke up at that time. So I was missing her. I was missing my ma. I was just so used to my ma doing everything for me. So I missed all that. And then, like I said, on the Saturday, the 90 minutes was just concentrating on me and I didn't have any care. It's like when people say you step over the white line and freedom. All your problems go. That was exactly it. I think that's why I played so well, because I had so many problems outside. I stepped onto the pitch and they just all vanished, and I just appreciate just being a footballer and play football.
And would many people come over to watch you make a few mates?
That was the thing. A lot of people would have come over, but they would have just seen happy, smiley person. They didn't see the
stuff Monday to Friday.
Yeah, they didn't see when they left what was going on. Not that I was in a terrible state. I just didn't really understand what I was going through. So they seen the happy side, and you know, I'd bring Goaty to go down to London, and because it's only 40 minutes away, right. So you say, "Oh, this is a great old life."
Yeah.
Then they go, and then you're back in the shadows watching DVDs that you watched 2 nights before.
What was the best DVD? What was your favorite DVD?
I don't know. I had the whole Harry Potter collection. All this, I had a load of series. I think I had a whole Game of Thrones series
Band
at one
Runners.
Stage. No.
So were you itching then, no, Chris? Did you always feel as though it was nearly inevitable that you'd come home here and play again in the League of Ireland?
Yeah, there was still a side of me that wanted to progress. You know, I always felt like everybody's dreams playing Premier League. I felt like at one stage in my career I could have possibly touch that kind of level.
A lot of people would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
technically
wouldn't be afraid to say that.
Yeah. So probably that side of me, I was like, oh no, we can go in there and thousands here. I can go set up everybody for life. But then there was always still that thing in the back of my head, oh, I need to go.
So did the Aberdeen thing not work out at all in terms of, like, you just weren't happy, or it was the wrong
thing? Nah, see, that was kind of the end. I was at the end of me time of what I could take and that was going through my head. So it was unfortunate because I had a great opportunity there. I think if I was playing there regularly every week, it would have opened up so many doors for me. But no, I wasn't there. Like I just wasn't ready. I was ready to go home, if that makes sense.
You made a point there that, you know, if you had played in the Premier League, you know, you could have set everybody up for life. Does that play on your head?
Massively, yeah, massively. Yeah, that's all I ever wanted to do.
For the family, look after the family. Yeah. That you felt that's your role in life.
Yeah, because it's not like we are poor, but you know, we weren't.
Yeah, but it's funny. It's
super
funny.
Rich. Well, you could have.
Are you the eldest?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest.
Yeah. Like, so if, like, I'm thinking, if I played in the Premier League or wherever, this, like, Jesus, I can buy my mom whatever she wants.
Yeah.
But it's funny, Chris, that you say that, right? But your man, your family, all they're thinking about is your happiness. They couldn't care less if you played for Manchester United or Smithfield as a banger once you were happy. That's all they're worried about. Which like, it's crazy the pressure that you might put on yourself in that regard, or you might look back and think, regret should have done this, I was going to buy them this house and that house and whatever. Yeah. But all your ma and your family, all they want is Chris to be smiling and happy. Like, yeah. It would have broke your ma's heart, I'd say, the Monday to Friday of knowing that you're going through a rough time or a sad time or whatever, that all you want to be doing is at home with them.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I only started to really kind of realise that.
And would you say you're in a much better place now that you're...
Yeah, massively, massively. But yeah, like you said, I'm thinking everybody's worries are on me and I need to do this for this person, do this for that person. But they didn't want it, nor did they need it probably at the time. But I felt like it was my obligation that, oh, if I'm earning this amount of money, I need to get more and look after this person. But it's...
So when you moved home to Pats, now obviously where you're playing, but you came home in 2019, you were much happier to be home, but... It's fair to say you weren't the Chris Forrester that we all knew in terms of your performances.
Yeah.
Would that be reflective on how you were feeling as well at the time in terms of maybe you just weren't in the right frame of mind, or was there anything that added to that? Can you put a finger on why you weren't maybe playing as well? Or
I always mess with Sam, our physio. I always say it's about the journey, not the destination, yeah? So I always think, like, my journey is to get better mentally. So I started off... really was done really well, went away, I was happy at start, wherever in between, and you know, my journey is where I'm at now. I'm happy, I'm not fully happy, if that makes sense. I'm not where I want to be, but I'm on the right way to being happy. So I always say,
do you
it's
know,
the journey, not the destination.
But do you
know what that destination in your head is?
Yeah, just to be happy and enjoying life and, you know, appreciate the, you know, the good things in life. And
so would you like, there's an awful lot of talk around now about mental health and players. And would you struggle with that kind of side?
Oh, massively. Yeah. That was my downfall, probably. Like the homesickness and, you know, we had some debts in the family and stuff like that, which weighed heavily on me. And, you know, I'm not one that really talks about with people. Not even probably with my missus. Like, she probably...
But would you always feel now from those experiences it's actually so much better to talk to people about it, maybe?
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, and I see a lot of things on Twitter, and you know, it's all good stuff on Twitter. It's like, you know, people want to get talking about the mental health, and you know, people are reaching out. I think it is, I'd never been able to reach out, but seeing this stuff on Twitter and all, people probably think it's all just BS talk, and you know, people just tweeting it for the sake of it to look like they're kind of good people.
Yeah.
But no, there is some genuine people out there who really want to listen and really want to help. And, you know, at the end of the day, your problems aren't as bad as you really think they are. I found the way that I kind of got out of this is through the gaffer coming in and me kind of working hard throughout my pre-seasons and, you know, in the off-season, kind of doing what I need to do and winning my little battles every day to... be a better person and be happier.
Can I go back to there when your pal died? You said you mentioned and you got quite emotional about it there, and then you mentioned there was deaths in the family or whatever, and maybe that was playing heavily on you in terms of your performances as well. Stevie comes in then. Would you have spoken to Stevie about this stuff, and would he be one that would be good around this kind of thing? Because as you says, you worked hard, you look at your fitness levels now and where you are, and maybe happier in your own mind, and it's reflective on the pitch.
Yeah, so I was speaking with Bermo today and saying I was coming on. He's like, oh, you're going to be licking the gaffer's ass. So I won't be telling any lies, right? So Gaffer's come in and he's really helped me. He's turned my career around kind of in terms of where I'm at now. Even Padge and all the coaching staff that are there, they're all just really good people that want to listen and want to help. And, you know, there's people, like I said, there's people out there that will pretend that they care. I think these genuinely care, they're passionate every day. So they're getting us to a level where we're feeling the same energy and we're like bringing that onto the pitch, if that makes sense. So yeah, he's been really good with me. You know, someone that you can trust, it's good to have that in the manager. I feel like I could trust him, tell him anything, and he tries best to help me out.
I know Stevie well, and he is a great lad, and you can see that, and obviously what he did with Dundalk, and he's gone in there, and it's no surprise to me to see that Stevie's doing a good job now, would you?
Yeah.
But I can safely say you don't need to lick his arse to get a game. You'll be getting a game anyway. And you can tell him I said that.
Yeah.
But you can see that in your performances now, Chris, which is great to see.
Yeah.
And obviously the start you've had, it's not just you that he's helping all the group, because he seemed to be much more. I watched you against the first night we covered the game against Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah.
And the one thing that stood out for me, we all know you're good players, the last number of years, Pats have always a good player, but I've always found is their hunger, a desire about them. I always felt it was a soft touch about Pats.
Yeah, we knew that. We knew that coming into the start of this season. We knew what the perception was. We had John come in, Mountney, and he was talking about his perception of what we were, and then we addressed how we can change it. So I think we're working on that, how we change that perception of us. And, you know, it's been going well. You can see in our performances that we're not that team anymore. Mm. We're definitely moving in the right direction.
That's what stood out for me. The fitness levels of you, you all look much stronger, physically stronger. I watched you against Bowes the night in Daly, about the 1-0 win, Coughlin as well. And you were quite comfortable that night also.
Yeah. We came under a lot of pressure in that game as well. And, you know,
stood up to it.
Whereas before, we probably would have went down, would have went 1-1 in that game. And I know what happened against Dundalk the other night, but they put a fair bit of pressure on us, and, you know, that can tend to happen. But I think the perception of us is definitely changing. How many years would it have been since anyone's talked about Pats
being contenders?
Mid table. So we're trying to change that perception.
So do you feel as well, Chris, in terms of, have you taken on with the experience you have now, even though you're 34?
Still very young, yeah.
But do you feel that there's a responsibility on you now as almost one of the, you mentioned you came into a dressing room with Killian Brennan, you were the young lad, but you're one of the senior players now.
Yeah, well, I have a lot to offer to the young lads. You see, there's a good base of, you know, all the kind of people at the club that have a lot of experience and have a lot to give. Like even Bermo, John Mountney, Robbie Benson, there's a lot of us there that have
and
a lot to offer.
As well.
Yeah, really good lads that are genuine lads. Have a lot to offer the younger boys, and I think the younger boys know that they had something to say, like to come to the boys about, and they'd help them out. And I feel like that's kind of my role now as well. Even though I'm only 28, I'm probably not that old, but they still have a lot to offer in terms of any aspect of the game. And, you know, talking on the bus with the boys on the way back from Dundalk to the younger boys, and just, you know, just having little chats with them and telling them what way it's going to be in the game, and, you know, what to expect and that, because they're still very young.
And even in terms of experiences off the pitch as well, like,
yeah, exactly, yeah. I'd help the boys any way they could. I could, and if they needed any help, you know. So yeah, I have plenty of experience to give.
So the Dundalk thing, Chris, that's brilliant and it's amazing. And as I say, I'm delighted that you come in, because it's the first time I've met you. I've been a fan of a long time. Stewie is a big fan as well. We both are, as you know. But we never really hear the inner city lads do any interviews, do we? Between Wezzo that we play with.
Don't you know Wezzo at all, do you?
No, I don't know him.
Nobody does interviews. So
exactly like you.
So to have you come in is an absolute pleasure, and the way you've spoken as well, and you're the most mannerly guest we've ever had as well.
Brilliant.
But just the Dundalk thing, did you get a sense up there that, I know you're focusing on Pats and what's going on, but did you get a sense with them that all is not right in that camp?
Yeah, you obviously hear it, and you see whatever's going on Twitter and stuff. You hear little rumblings of what's happening in the club, but, you know, we knew what we had to do going up there, and, you know, it's one of them, if you're not in your game, you're going to get turned over anyway, because the players that they have, regardless of what's going on, they're really good players. I think we went up there and it didn't give us any extra motivation. We had a game plan and we had a mindset set on what we needed to do.
Disappointed with the late equaliser, yeah.
Yeah, it was disappointing, but, you know, in terms of what points we have from the games that we've played, you know, we've played the three very top teams in the league away, and we've got good points against them. So it's not been a bad return in terms of that, but losing a goal that late is always going to be disappointing.
How are you finding about the crowds? What's your take on it?
I haven't really paid any attention.
Much.
It's more kind of, the games are kind of like training games, if that makes sense, sometimes. Yeah. And you're kind of coaching the game better, because you can hear everything now. Yeah. You can, you know, kind of coach your own, you can coach the referees a bit better and stuff like that. Not coach them, that's the wrong word. Like
you can talk to
the referees, but you can coach your own players more. I think it's been good, yeah.
It's an interesting, because you might have crowds coming back in at a stage in the season where it might be the business end, and I just wonder how it will affect everybody when the pressure just suddenly comes on, yeah.
Did you find, Chris, I know you probably won't say it publicly, but I'm sure you have your own targets in terms of what you want to achieve. Maybe at the start of the season we wouldn't have seen you as title contenders, but the way things have panned out at the start, people might be suggesting that.
That's what I'm saying, trying to change that perception.
Okay.
So that's what we're trying to do. Trying to change the perception of myself. Like you said, no one's talked about me. The gaffer said to me the other day, no one's talked about you since, 2017 probably.
Yeah.
So he's saying, what are you doing to change that? And, you know, trying to channel me into changing people's perception of me and, you know, bringing the best out of me. So I think that's what I'm trying to do.
And in
terms of a club, I think we're trying to change the perception of ourselves and, you know, we'll have to continue to work hard.
It's amazing now, Stu, isn't it? And it's brilliant to see from speaking to Chris and how deep you can get as a person as well, but also the psychology that goes into maybe management and stuff now, that whereas before it would have always been about just you go out training and you do your bits on the pitch. Stevie's probably having conversations with you now about his uses, people's perception of you and the optics and how you look outside. So psychologically, what you're trying to do in terms of changing mindsets and stuff, there's so much more involved nowadays in football than the old days of just train shooters to go out there and do your stuff, Chris.
Yeah, good luck going out on the pitch.
Yeah, well, the old saying, the truth hurts. You know, when you've got somebody from the outside coming in and saying, well, like Mountain, good example. I don't know how people would have taken that.
But he's supposed to be a great lad.
When he comes along and says, well, people think you're soft.
Yeah.
Like, that probably hurts a little bit, doesn't it?
It does. You start to, like, say, well, yeah, not wrong, but what are we going to do about it? Yeah,
you can take it two ways. You can either get offended by it, or you can say, what are we going to do to change it?
Yeah, and that's all I think we're trying to do and what we are kind of doing at the moment.
The Dundalk thing, Stu, we sat here last week. I said to you, after all that was going on and how bad it looked, that it wouldn't surprise me in 2 or 3 days if you hear that they're all gone, and they're all gone.
Chris, a great man once said, a week is a long time in football. Right, you heard that saying, did you?
Well, I heard it.
Nobody else did.
All right, I'm going to.
This I said it last year.
All right, here's in series two, Stu, a week is a long time in football. The Dundalk story, are you surprised?
Oh, well, no, obviously not. No, didn't know it was coming. But then when Shane Keegan has moved away, you kind of sense, oh, there's something starting to happen now, you know. But it's extremely worrying, for that football club, because you know, when you look at what they've achieved over what is going, I mean, it's the guts of a decade, but I mean, let's say it's, you know, 6-7 years really, you know. It's a long time, very long time in League of Ireland standards. You know, clubs here have very rarely been on top for that period of time, and they have been a standard setter, you know, for everybody else. Chris has only just mentioned Mountney, Stevie O'Donnell, Robbie Benson, Paddy Barrett. That all that experience rubs off on other teams, and other teams benefit from that. But to, you know, it's extremely worrying to see them in this kind of state, and more so. You know, I've always felt that since the owners have gone in there, there has never been much of a focus on developing the football club. You know, the infrastructure, the stand is a big thing, and I would worry now that this ownership may be looking at trying to get out of there. You know, get out of Dodge, and if they do,
with everything left the same, it won't be
great for the club at all. Like, you know, but it's
now on the other side of that. Actually, the only thing, because I was very critical of them yesterday in an interview, but more so about how it's been mismanaged. I feel I had a little bit of sympathy for Shane Keegan in the sense that he's just been thrown into it. Like, he's not there on merit, or he's not. It's only because he has the pro license. So he done the honourable thing in resigning and just getting out himself, I felt. The Giovagnoli thing, there was always question marks for me about him at the start and how he came in. He did okay and obviously won the cup. Good luck to him. But they could actually turn things around with the right appointment now. But the only problem is, like, they're only 5 games into the season, 11 points. They're only 9 points behind. They've still a very good squad of players. If the right man comes in, but without the interference that we hear from the top, they could still turn things around. But whether that'll happen, because apparently the interference from the top is desperate.
I don't think it's going to happen. No, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, look, the last thing we want to see is Dundalk completely dwindle away and fall into a complete and utter shambles. Mm. You know, we don't want that. Nobody wants that. No. No one wants that. You know, we want, I mean, Pats will obviously want them to be competitive. The more competitive the league is, believe it or not, it actually works out in your favour. Like, you know, because what you want is you want other teams to go there and know they're going to get a game. You know, that kind of way. But let's not press the panic button yet. There's an excellent squad there. They'll definitely turn it around, and they'll definitely climb up that table. I think it's more important now that they get an appointment right.
That's the crucial thing.
It's a crucial thing, yeah. Because, you know, if they get somebody in there that isn't, you know, isn't what Dundalk deserves,
then they could be in, they'll be in real trouble, like, you know, and they're not gonna get back to anywhere near where we know they can be. Plus, I think don't forget, supporters are coming back here, you know, and we've seen a lot of the Dundalk supporters express, you know, their concerns. They were at the game, the Pats game. They were
banners
demonstrating outside. You got to get back on side with them as well. Like, you know, it's a one town football club, and they're very proud of their football club up there. You know, for a long time, the football club was considered to be the cornerstone and the foundation of, you know, everything that's kind of good about Dundalk. You know, and it'd be horrible to see that just suddenny dwindle away. So the appointment is huge. They have to get the right person involved.
Do you find, Chris, Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk, what's the standard like playing against obviously the two best teams now, compared to maybe your time before you went to England and since you've come back?
Yeah, Dundalk, I think, were coming. They were starting to get to what they are now. I think when Richie Towland, that was there towards the end of Pat's kind of good run for that 4 years, and then they just took it levels above. You can see the kind of the benchmark of what every club aspires to be. You know, they've gone to Europa League, and they were always absolute animals. You know, you're getting a good game and you go up there. But yeah, I think the standard of them two clubs is massive. You know, they're very big clubs in the league, and you know it's what you want to aspire. It's like she said, you know, you're getting a game, and you know it's very good for the league, and you know, it's, I think the league needs teams like that. So
tomorrow night, Waterford at home.
Yeah.
Easy 3 points.
It's no easy 3 points in the league, you know that.
No, there's not. Absolutely not. But you're obviously looking forward to the game, yeah?
Yeah, looking forward to it, you know. Feeling fit, feeling well. We done our prep today. So, you know, we'll go into that game the way we approach every other game. You know, I don't think Waterford have had the best start, but that doesn't make any difference to us.
Well, we watched them against Sligo Rovers, and regardless of the start they have, like, they're very hungry, fit side, well organised. It'll be a tough game. Like.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you can't go into the game thinking that, oh, this is going to be a walkover.
In all the years I've played in the league, and I don't know about you, Stewie, and now you, Chris, there's never been an easy game. I've never come off and thought, oh, that was easy.
I grew up with that mentality playing in this league. I think it's important that you have that mentality either way. You know, you can, and there's also, you also need to be honest as well sometimes. I mean, funnily enough, you mentioned the fact there, when you played Dundalk, you were talking to the young lads after the game about a few things. Like, and I remember doing that an awful lot through my time when I got to a certain age, because
you didn't talk to me a lot.
Blank.
You'd Ollie and Roddy. Nice face. But what I found was the younger lads, you know, you might win a game and not play well, and know you're better. The young lads thought, oh, this is great, this is easy. Like, you know, or you'd watch video footage of some of the European players, and the younger lads would be like, oh, these aren't that great.
You go and
play against them.
You're getting a run around. You
know, so you always had to be honest with yourself, and you had to kind of always bring yourself down as well. Even if you won a game, if you didn't play well, you had to be honest with yourself and say, no, we didn't play well, we can play better, like, you know, and try and ground everybody, I suppose. And I think when you get to that stage in your career, you know, everything seems easier from then on. But
Stewie was one of them fellas, Chris, in the dressing room, that, you know, the fella, the rock of sense fella. So you know, there's the couple in the corner having the crack, yeah, and there's another few over there talking about the clothes they bought at the weekend, and all. And then the fella that's just in the middle say, shut up, you over there, how you stop fucking out training. That was Stewie.
Yeah. No, but I think you're right in terms of that. You can't get too high, you can't get too low. Just need to find that middle ground, regardless of results. You know, if you have a bad game, you can't beat yourself up. Which I find a lot of people would do. What I used to do to myself.
Yeah,
you had a bad game or a few bad touches, it's what you do next, I suppose.
So would you be your biggest critic?
Yeah, massively. I was, not anymore.
Okay.
I kind of just allow myself to be who I am now, and, you know, not kind of worry about what's going wrong or what's going right. It's like Shuey said, just middle ground, and, you know, just trying to maintain your standards.
So at a 34-year-old now that you are,
yeah,
right? The fact that you're 28 now, Chris, in terms of Queen Street, all that you've gone through,
yeah,
the emotional roller coaster up and down and around, and wherever you find yourself on the road to that destination you spoke about,
yeah,
Pat's doing well. Like, what more do you see for yourself in terms of, as I touched on the interview at the start, that you're at the ripe old age now that your best years are, you're bang in the middle of them?
Yeah, that's why I thought 28 was a bit old. I thought I was coming to the end.
You're starting. Is the best yet to come?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I've got I think you said it last week, when you once you start realizing that the hard work, you don't want to go back to the old ways.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, I found a good balance of, you know,
were you listening to him last week and taking?
Yeah, I seen it on Twitter. You tagged me on Twitter, so
you're appreciating what you're getting from hard work now.
Yeah, I thought I worked hard when I was younger and that, and like my mates are texting me now saying, "Jesus, putting some shift there." I always thought I was putting in shifts, so I suppose I wasn't.
The only shift in you were doing was young ones back in the day.
Yeah, to be fair to you, you were lobbing goalkeepers, you were getting away with it.
Yeah, that's all. And then, like, I always thought I worked hard, but, you know, this is a different level of working hard now, and, you know, we're all on the same page, we're all pulling the same direction up hats. But in terms of, for myself, yeah, there's still life in the old dog, yeah.
Brilliant.
Come here to me, do you have Wi-Fi in the gaff now, do you?
Yeah, I have everything. We miss a sort, so I don't do a top.
What's your favourite? What's it? Give us a Netflix show.
A Netflix show?
Are you into Netflix?
Do you see Lupin?
No.
It's a French.
Oh, the French sort French of...
very good, that.
Like a detective, yeah, magician,
he's like
type. Illusionist.
Yeah,
so I did see that.
There's
that's
only one thing good. That's what I'd recommend. Anyone should be watching. The Drive to Survive. Formula One.
No, I don't know into that.
I had no interest. I wouldn't watch Formula 1 if it was on out in the street.
Yeah.
And this thing is unreal. Check it out, honestly.
Nah.
Lupin's good. It's very
Lupin's
good.
Very good.
Lupin isn't a patch on the Formula 1.
Did you watch Lupin?
It's very good. I can't watch it on Netflix without subtitles now, by the way. I don't know what that is about, but yeah. That's just a bit of information I thought I'd give you.
Okay, Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure. Stewie, I'm going to run through a few of these results the weekend. Waterford, Bowes, I'm glad to see Bowes backing up the win now. Back to back, they've gone for the first time this season. Cornwall with a tap in. Derry and Drogheda, we were in Derry. Good night in Derry. We did a bit of sightseeing and everything.
Stop with you. The bar wasn't open in the hotel, for Christ's
sake. Some crack. If them walls could talk in Derry, we had some crack.
Oh.
Shamrock Rovers 2, Longford 1. I'm going to give Longford, I know I've been hard on them so far, I'm going to give them praise. They were robbed the other night in terms of, not that Shamrock Rovers were lucky with the late goal, but the effort that Longford put into the game, and they worked their socks off. They deserved at least the point, I felt, from it. They were really unlucky. And if they play like that in the games, they might be okay, because I have them tipped for relegation everywhere. But no, they did. They done quite well, and they should have got a point. Gannon got the late goal. But Sligo Rovers as well. Young Johnny Kenny, 17 years of age, his first goal, Stewie.
Great stuff. Yeah, you know, your high praise for him.
Ah, yeah, 17. It's a huge moment for him. His dad was a legend at the club, and for him to get his first goal, like, we're speaking about Chris wanting to play with Bowes, like, he would have grown up watching his dad in the showgrounds like us all, and now he's the hero. It's brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful news, no, especially to get your first goal as well. You'll remember that one.
John, fixtures. So there's fixtures tomorrow night, and there's also obviously the games Friday, but tomorrow night, Drogheda, Shamrock Rovers, Bowes, Sligo Rovers, Derry, Dundalk, Longford, Finn Harps, and Chris Forrester and Waterford. In the first division, Bray 1, Athlone 2, Athlone riding high still, Wexford 1, Cove 2, UCD 4, Cabinteely 1, Galway 1, Treaty 1, and Shells 3-1 against Cork, Stu.
Come on, the Reds.
And in the Women's League, Bowes 3, Cork City 3, DLR Waves 2, Galway 1, and a big game between Piemont and Shelburne. Piemont ran out 2-1 winners. So that's the fixtures, that's the results. Chris, honestly, we've admired you for a long time. I've been a big fan because of the way you play the game. That's the way I'd like to think I played the game. But in terms of the technical footballer that you are, we have admired you for a long time. So, and Stevie's right. Maybe there wasn't people talking about you for the last 2 or 3 years, but now they're all talking about you again, and it's great to see, because I have no doubt whatsoever. I think you could be the best player in this league, no problem again. And hopefully that's the case for the coming season. And it's great to see Pat's up there doing so well too. And I hope to continue that form and sustain it, because I really enjoyed my time at Pats, and they're a big club. They should be up challenging for things, shouldn't they?
Yeah, always loved Pats, I have to say. Just always felt they could be getting a lot more out of what they have in the last 20 years, I suppose, like, you know. But from what Chris is telling us, they're on the way back.
Brilliant. So I don't want to end the show, because it's been really good, on a sad note, but I just want to offer our condolences to Tim Clancy as well. His mum passed away over the weekend, and it was a tough weekend for him. The fact that he was up at the match in Derry, and we were chatting to him afterwards, and it was tough going, but we send our condolences to Tim, and we're thinking of all him and his family. But Chris, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Stewie, thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks to Benetti Menswear, as always, for sponsoring the show as well. Without them, we wouldn't be here. And Paul Morris, the brains behind everything. Thanks a million.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.